Trekkies, and welcome to another episode of Trek Freaks, part of the Geek Freaks Podcast Network. On this podcast, we review and analyze episodes of Star Trek, starting all the way back at the original series. My name is John. I'll be your host, joined by a very special co-host today, Susie.
Hey, you're joined by a Disney Mom's Gone Wrong, yes. Which is also part of the Geek Freaks Network. If you are a mom or Disney dad, doesn't really matter, you can head over to our channel and take a look at hear our podcast. Anyways, I'm glad to be here.
What was the most recent one you guys recorded?
The most recent one was Cars.
Cars. Nice. That's a good movie, too.
I loved Cars. It was a good movie. Sarah, who's another Disney mom, felt dusty in it. So I was like, okay.
That's good. All right. So before we jump into this, Susie, I got to ask you, what episode are we reviewing today?
Oh, we are reviewing from season 2, episode 14, Wolf in the Fold.
Awesome. I am slightly excited about this one.
This was an interesting one.
Yeah, it wasn't the best. I feel like every episode I'm complaining about Star Trek when, you know, I claim to be a fan, but reviewing it definitely does make me like it more most times. So after the first watch, I'm usually kind of bummed out, and then reviewing it step by step is like, that was better than I thought. But before we dive into our warp speed recap, I want to ask you, have you ever faced any major fear in your life, and how are you able to overcome it?
That's every day as a mom. Will I be able to keep this tiny human alive? You know? Well, I don't know. Like, personally, I think about, like, you know, transitioning from, like, teenage years into adulthood, like, that is, like, a different level of fear, right? Because like once you turn 18, though culturally, like I turned 18, that meant nothing to my mom. But, you know, legally, there's a lot of different aspects to it. Like you can open up your own bank account. You can be charged with federal criminal offenses. Like, you know what I mean? Like you go to big boy jail instead of juvie. So I think though, like personally, the biggest fear for me was transitioning from a teenager into like adulthood. And how did I confront that fear? I think it had to do with the people that I was surrounded by. So like I grew up in the church. And so having like a good mentor from my church really helped a lot. And then my mom, who is legit my ride or die, she played a big part in me being able to figure out what did I want to do as an adult? Like how do I approach certain aspects of adulthood? And yeah, just being able to have that village, right? That people that you can count on, depend on.
It's a lot about people in your life.
Yeah.
I agree. I had a short story back when I was a little kid. I don't remember, probably like 10 years old. I watched the movie Leprechaun. For some reason, I really liked the movie, but it scared the hell out of me. I had nightmares for, I don't know, what feels like forever. It was probably just like a week or something like that. But so I was really afraid of that movie. But until my brother, Frankie, producer, editor, director of all of our Geek Freaks, everything, he explained to me that the actor that plays Leprechaun also plays Willow in this other movie that's, you know, Willow. There's a new series of it coming out soon, I think. And he was in a lot of other things, in Star Wars and stuff like that. But to see that and then kind of the behind the scenes magic that it's just makeup that goes on this guy and he's just playing around, this is a character he's playing, totally kind of broke down that fear. And I think it's just kind of peeking behind the curtain and putting a little bit of logic to it that this isn't real. This is all a play that they're doing pretty much on camera. So that was able to like help me overcome it, you know, completely. Like, from one day to the next, I was okay to continue watching those movies and not have nightmares.
Yeah, see, even if I do, if I am exposed to that, like, I still wouldn't be able to, like, watch it. Because, like, I remember, like, as a kid, like, the scary Disney movies would, like, scare the shit out of me.
Like Hocus Pocus was as far as you can go?
Like Hocus Pocus was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to have nightmares after this. Like, no.
So there's a sequel coming out pretty soon. Are you going to be able to watch that?
You know what? It has to be in broad daylight. Okay. All the windows are open. Cannot be near any time of like sunset because I'd be absolute no.
Jeez. Okay. I like it. Well, hopefully we get a Disney Mom's Gone Wrong review of Hocus Pocus around Halloween time.
Yes. I'm excited for that one.
All right, so let's jump into our Warp Speed recap. What begins as relaxing shore leave quickly turns into a ruthless murder, and Scotty is found holding the knife. Unable to remember or explain himself, an investigation is opened. Another woman murdered, and Scotty the only other person around. How can this be? Was his recent head injury a lot worse than anticipated? Kirk is determined to prove his crewman's innocence, and yet a third murder. This time with blood on his hands. A trial is held using their ship's computer system to find the truth. Scotty is being honest, and yet the pieces just aren't adding up. With some smart use of the computer databanks, they are able to figure it out. Scotty is being possessed by an alien entity that feeds on fear. This creature then takes control of the ship's systems. To avoid showing fear, the crew gets doped up on a sedative while Kirk and Spock fight the entity. Eventually, it possesses a body, which they're able to drug. With it incapacitated, they beam him into space to be spread across the galaxy. Though a little extra happy, the crew is finally able to enjoy their short leave. All right, so after that Warp Speed recap, what did you think about that episode, Susie?
I think that, hold on.
that's a little bit crazy, right?
So, okay, wait. I'm glad you didn't ask me to do the Warp Speed recap.
It would have been focused on like the first three scenes?
No, I would have said in like one simple sentence, you know, like Law and Order meets Deja Vu crime scene. Like, so, you know.
Deja Vu is a local strip club, by the way. Yeah, I get you.
I'm like, what is going on here?
Oh, man. Yeah, it was weird. So we can go. Let's get into the mission report, scene by scene. We open in this like pleasure lounge, right? We're obviously on some kind of alien
it's a strip
planet.
Club. Don't say pleasure lounge.
We didn't see anyone take clothes off, though. So, I mean, there's those clubs where they sell, I mean, locally. This is another planet. Locally, you either can take off clothes but not sell alcohol, or sell alcohol and not take off clothes, something
like
that.
I'm very concerned that you know all these rules, Jonathan.
Yeah, I talk to men. But anyway, so that's what I'm thinking. Maybe it was that kind of thing where it's like, well, they just dance around. She was like belly dancing, but everyone's just laying around watching.
Everyone, all these men, there's only men in that room, and they like drooling with their jaws hitting the floor. And I'm like, what? Is this, are you sure this is Star Trek?
Yeah. Well, what's funny is because it's not dancing like we think, you know, you would see in a local club or something. But you have to realize this is also on an alien planet. So, you know, there might be Orions and Tellarites and all these other, you know, Andorians and stuff.
Yeah.
That come there. So this might be a mix of what all the other planets like to see. But she's like tweaking out every once in a while. Like she like twitches as part of her dancing.
Yeah.
Like, why are you twitching? Like, what is wrong with you?
There was one scene where she was like trying to shimmy.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like a shimmy. It was like her whole body was convulsing. I'm like, what is going on? Are you okay?
Oh man, like she has some kind of medical disorder we don't know about. Poor lady, should we call for help?
Oh, and then oh gosh, what was the guy's name? The one that was being
Scotty?
Scotty.
Yeah.
He was just like
smitten.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. I'm just like, no, never mind. I'm gonna keep that inappropriate joke in my mouth.
So Kirk does point out that the Argilians, which is these people, I think very highly of their pleasure. But yeah, I couldn't believe she just didn't seem like a good dancer to us, but they were super excited about her.
They're goo goo gaga.
Yeah. But there's a man that sits near them that looks a little questionable. He's kind of giving them.
He's sus. Yeah, I agree.
Eyes. So then Scotty takes this lady for a walk in the fog. Like Kirk had arranged this in advance. So it's like, is this a dance place, a strip club, or is this straight up prostitution? I don't know. But either way, Scotty was taking her out for a walk.
Yeah. The fact that all three of those guys were in that strip club, that's kind of weird. I would never go to a strip club with my boss.
Yeah.
Well, no, thank you.
The captain.
Yeah. No, thank you.
And yet he's the one. Well, so to be fair, we're leaving out a little bit of the story. Scotty had just suffered some kind of brain injury, head injury. And it was done by a woman, like whatever the cause of the... Yeah, you know, failure injury, to the ship. Yeah, it was a woman's fault, and it could have killed him. He had some head trauma, and he's recovering from it. So Bones was trying to say, like, yeah, his head will be okay. You know, he might have some resentment against women, but he won't. He shouldn't have long term injury or damage in his brain from this. So I think maybe this is kind of far fetched and I don't know, silly, but I think they're taking him out somewhere intentionally for him to go have fun. To make sure he doesn't hold a grudge against women the rest of his life.
Oh, I see. You know what I mean?
Trying to like, okay, women aren't all bad, so we want you, you know, on this shore leave, you're gonna go have some fun, meet another woman, and realize, yeah, they're not out to kill you or something like that.
Okay. Continue.
But so Kirk and Bones leave to go to some other establishment, and they're super excited. They're like, oh yeah, that one that you know we talked about, yeah, let's go to that one. And it's like, you guys are acting like little kids that just found a porno magazine or something like that. Like, they're so super excited. Like, well, come on, guys. This is
too excited. Yes.
A little much. You're supposed to be professionals. But then we hear a loud scream while the guys are walking away.
Yes.
The dancer is stabbed, and we see Scotty kind of in the corner against the wall holding the knife.
Yeah, but he's, like, shaking, and he has, like, this blank stare on his face.
Yeah, exactly. You have such good memory. So I think after that is when we go to the intro. We come back and we meet Mr. Hengist from Rigel 4, who was appointed to be the lead investigator on this. Scotty can't remember anything that happened. He remembers that they're walking in the fog and then she screamed, but then he can't remember anything after that until they arrived and he's holding the knife. But Kirk and Bones are just insistent they must find a way to prove Scotty's innocence because they know him. He's a good guy, and they're like, there's no way he could have murdered this woman. Like, she was stabbed 12 times in the abdomen. That's not like him. So they're pulling at straws trying to find a way to prove his innocence. Then we meet what they call the prefect, which is some kind of leader in their society. But his name is Jarrus. He states that their law is love. He says, our law is love. Mm-hmm. He introduces his wife, Sibo, who is kind of like a mystic or something. She has these abilities from their ancestors. Something like 200 years ago, they used to use these empathic abilities to find the truth. And now they've entered this period of enlightenment, so they don't need that anymore, usually. But in this case, it will come in handy. Because they pretty much don't have violence on the planet anymore. They even state that they are a peaceful society. But they call it the Argillian Empathic Contact, which to me sounds kind of like a mind meld. I don't know. I know we see a Next Generation empaths. Gosh, I can't remember the lady's name. That's terrible. we see empaths in Star Trek and other series. Where they can sense another person's like emotions and their intent and not quite read their mind, but feel what they feel.
Yeah.
So that's supposed to be, I think, what her ability is to some extent. Also with inanimate objects, like she theoretically could hold the knife and feel like what happened with that knife, kind of thing. Feel then energy from it. So that's supposed to be what her ability is. So then they head to Jarrus's home, Jarrus and Sibo's home, to conduct this empathic contact where they're going to do some kind of ritual, because there's no clear evidence aside from, you know, the two of them were both standing in the fog together and then she's dead. But there's no.
So they're going to like read his subconscious. Is that what they're doing?
His emotions. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
She will feel what he felt. So she'll feel if he's filled with rage or resentment for women. Or if he's just confused or scared, or, you know, she should be able to bring that up. And more so, they found the murder weapon. He was holding it. So she'll be able to feel from the weapon you know, if it had been used for multiple murders, or, you know, if it was used by him, maybe, I don't know. But we don't really get that far. So Kirk calls for a technician to come down with a psycho tricorder. Never heard of that before in any of the other Star Trek series, but it's interesting. So it's a tricorder specifically for scanning like brain waves, and it can read or chart or log whatever brain activity for the last 24 hours. So it would be able to tell them if he was losing consciousness on and off, or if he was going into like a mental frenzy or any kind of spike in neurological activity, something like that. So that would be super helpful. But then we see Mr. Hengist leaves to go round up the other witnesses and bring them back, because they're going to be conducting this ritual and investigation. So at that point, Scotty goes with the technician, Lieutenant Tracy, which I don't know if that's her first name or last name. But Lieutenant Tracy sounds like her last name, but I don't think we got a first name. But anyways, he goes with her to do this psycho tricorder scans, right? As SIBO is looking for the knife that was supposed to be at this little ritualistic altar spot, they hear this loud scream.
It goes dark. The room goes dark, right?
Not when they're... This is when Scotty's out of the room. Scotty and Tracy go into another room, and you hear a scream. There, everyone else is looking around for that knife.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and then it's like as soon as they tried to find the knife, then they walk in the room, they find Tracy's laying on the ground dead, and Scotty's in a chair, like, slumped back, unconscious. So it's almost like something came in and attacked them both, but we don't know. So once again, another dead body around Scotty, and nobody to point the finger at but him. Let's see. So then they wake up Scotty, and he once again remembers nothing. He's like, yeah, you know, I was sitting in the chair. She had the little tricorder, and we were gonna do the readings, and then you guys woke me up here. So no recollection of what's happening. Mr. Hengist returns with the two witnesses from the first murder that saw, you know, the men in the club. And so we kind of get to meet them a little bit. One of them was the first victim's fiance, kind of, at least that's how he says it. His name is Morla. And the other one was her father, which we don't get his name. Morla, you know, obviously has motivation because he was supposed to be getting married to, I don't think I have her name in my notes, but it was like Jara. But anyways, he was supposed to get married to that first victim. And he was jealous of her dancing with other men and stuff like that in the club and going for walks and whatnot. So he clearly has motive, but there's no evidence against him at all. So SIBO is ready. She calls everyone together to do the empathic contact. As they're gathering, Kirk asks that they seal the room. He doesn't want any funny business. And so they do. They have a panel that they're able to flip the switches, and all these doors slide shut, which was kind of a cool effect. It was looked legit. But then Scotty points out that he's not too excited about this. He's nervous to put his, you know, future in the hands of these people with this, he calls it spooky mumbo jumbo, but this like witchcraft to him. So what do you think about that? Would you, if you were Scotty, would you trust that this, you know, magic kind of stuff can be unbiased and won't get you killed?
Hell no. They're from the same planet. The lady that's going to tell me if I'm lying or not is from the same planet where all these murders are coming from. So of course there's going to be some type of bias.
True. I didn't even think about
that. Hell no.
She's probably going to try to defend her people, and it's easy to point out that this alien that's...
We didn't have a problem until you were around. Yeah, no, fuck that.
Okay. I agree. The problem, so he's an engineer, so he's going to be thinking like technically and logically, right? And so so he just wouldn't trust in something like this that's magic that can't be verified to some extent. But he's kind of in a bind because they are on this planet. When they're visiting a planet, a Federation planet,
yeah,
they have to follow the local laws of the planet, excluding, I'm sure, a few specific Federation laws, like the Prime Directive they can't break. But with that, I mean, this is, they haven't had this kind of an issue for 200 years, but that's how it used to be settled. So their prefect is saying, you know, sorry guys, but if this is what's going on, then this is the only way we know to do it is the old ways. So yeah, it's a little sketchy. But then, so everybody gathers in a circle around this like ritualistic, like fire pit kind of thing. So she can do the ritual. She starts speaking and she's saying, you know, a bunch of different words. She says there's an evil that she feels in the room.
Yeah. And when she's like chanting or speaking, it's not like in a specific way. Like she's not saying like complete sentences. It's like phrases and words. And
yeah, it's almost kind of just like falling out. Like it's.
Yeah.
Yeah. I see what you mean. Being forced out of her.
Yeah.
Kind of. So then the lights go out and she screams. Uh-oh. Sure enough.
She did,
yeah. Scotty's holding her and in her back is a knife and there's blood on his hands. It could not be, I mean, it could only be slightly more clear would be watching him push the knife in slowly.
Just a little bit.
Yeah, but I mean, it's like, how can he even say, I didn't do it when you're standing there? You're the only person standing next to her.
And there's like no one else around him. So it's like literally just like the gal and Scotty with the knife in her back. And there's no one else around to say like, oh, you know, Billy Bob was the one who did it.
So, but this time he doesn't say, I don't remember. He just says, I didn't do it. So.
Because he's traumatized.
Yeah, right. So Jarrus, which is her husband, the prefect, agrees that they need to go to the Enterprise. I'm surprised he doesn't just freak out. Like, if I'm in a room with like maybe six people and my wife just got stabbed in the back, I'm pulling the knife and we're going to count down to zero.
Well, this planet's all about love, so.
Yeah, they're peaceful people.
Yeah.
And period of enlightenment for 200 years and all that stuff. We're not enlightened here yet.
But okay, so like, I know we didn't talk about it.
But we
earlier,
go back. Yeah.
But like how they were talking about the planet of love. Tell me, maybe it's just my brain, the way that it's all weird or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, this is a swinger planet.
Like, oh yeah, no doubt. This is like '60s and you know, like, free
you
love.
What do you mean, the planet of love? Like what? And you got belly dancers everywhere? Mm-hmm. No, this is a swinger planet.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And they have in later series there are. Maybe it's just like cities or something. I can't remember. I'm so terrible. I should have a better memory if I'm going to pretend to be a Star Trek expert. But there's like pleasure planets that you can go to. And it's like a, you know, vacation resort, like going to Cabo or something like that. But you go to this planet where that's what they do is they're all about, you know, entertaining other people that want to come visit.
Have you seen Pinocchio?
Oh, yeah. That's creepy, though.
Yeah, very.
Yeah, don't go there. Never mind. I don't want to be turned into a donkey. just for smoking a cigar and was he drinking alcohol?
Something like that. Useless fucking cricket.
Right.
I need to stop cursing.
Oh man. Okay, so yeah, after they find his wife is dead, they're like, we really gotta figure out what's going on here. Everyone's saying, oh, Scotty's a good guy, he couldn't be doing this. And Scotty's like,
he is.
I don't know how this is possible, but I promise I'm not doing it. It's not me.
Mm-hmm.
So Jarrus agrees because Kirk convinces him that the Enterprise has super sophisticated computers. It can analyze what's going on and give us answers with no doubt. He said there will be no doubt in the results. It'll be definitive. He just says, okay, you know what? We'll go that route. We'll use your system to check it out. But if we find that your man's guilty, then we have to punish him based on our laws, our old laws, which mean he will be put to death by torture, by slow torture. Like, well, that sucks. Is there a trade-off? Can we do something different? Maybe we'll ask one of your people, but the penalty would just be like a slap on the wrist. I don't know. Figure something out.
But like, okay, this is my thing. Why wasn't that step one? Why?
Well, because they're trying to follow their methods and stuff like that. But the only person they knew that still had that ability to empathic contact was his wife, who's now dead. So like, well, shit, you don't have the tools to, you know, to do it anymore. Yeah, and a lot of people are dying, so like whatever gets answered, let's go to your ship. Maybe if people are dying on your ship, it's gonna be better than dying on our planet,
right?
That's, yeah, so they go to the Enterprise, and Mr. Scotty takes the stand And sure enough, the computer says that he is perfectly healthy. There's no reason for him to have blacked out or anything like that. So right away, you're like, oh, crap. So he must be lying then.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But then they ask him questions and the computer affirms that he is telling the truth. Which this proves, not that he's innocent, but it does prove that he does not remember anything about the first two murders. But he does explain that he didn't black out for the third murder. And that's like, oh, well, okay, you didn't really clarify that earlier. He says he didn't black out when Sibo, the empath, was killed. But he did. He ran to her when the lights went out, and she screamed. But there was a dark, cold entity that was in his way. There was something, you know, I think we're meant to believe is like a ghost. But he said it was like a cold breeze from a slaughterhouse or something like that. I didn't get the wording right. I'm sure it's some
yeah, I don't remember.
Some Scottish terminology.
It was Casper.
Yeah, right. So pretty much he's saying like there's some kind of dark entity between us, and then the lights came on and I'm standing there with a knife.
Yeah.
And Mr. Hengist at this point is getting a little squirmy. We see he's kind of like getting annoyed with this process. Like, hey, this guy just killed three people. Why are we all playing dumb? Like, let's just settle this and be done with it. So he doesn't agree with the process that they're trying to go through. But Jarrus, the prefect from the planet, is, you know, their senior leader. He says, no. For now, we're going to assume that what they say, you know, that their technology is accurate. And we'll take it at their word, but I reserve the right to make the final decision myself. You know, not regarding what their computer says. So after that, we see Morla, the first victim's... Carla, that was her name. Carla's fiance takes a stand. He says he loved her and he couldn't kill her and whatnot. And we know this is from a planet of lovey-dovey people that murders not... something they know how to do.
Yeah.
But then her father stands up and protests and he says, no, you know, he may think she loved him, but she didn't love him. And they fought constantly. They mostly fought because he was jealous. And in this planet, you know, it's like you're saying, it's a swinger party. It's all free love. So in this planet, one of the biggest disgraces that you can like put on yourself is jealousy. Like you're supposed to be open to, you know, free love and everything, I guess. So she would fight with him because he would be so jealous, and the dad, you know, knew it and whatnot. But so the computer pretty much verifies that he didn't kill any women. They ask him, and it's like a lie detector. But he's a little sad now to find out that his dead fiance didn't actually love him,
that's pretty sad.
That's kind of mean, yeah. And the dad is like happy to yell it at him because he's, you know, been disgraced as a jealous man. So then we go back to Sibo's contact that she had, where she was shouting out a bunch of words. Now, pretty much that the questioning they had didn't really come to a clear answer. They decide to kind of dig in a little deeper to that. These testimonials aren't really making sense. I mean, they see Scotty's innocent, Scotty doesn't remember having done anything bad, but the first two crimes are still kind of up in the air. And then that entity, they don't know what that was. But they start to ponder the words that she was yelling, and they are asking the computer to search the data banks. And the computer does verify that they were the names of serial killers from the past that primarily murdered women.
Yes, and which I thought was a weird, like... It was weird how they got to that point of like...
Yeah, I think it was just kind of a leap they had to make in the story to connect the dots and make sense.
Yeah.
But so, and so at one point Spock mentions like, oh, okay, so it makes sense that this entity that they kind of figured out it has to be. And they associate it with a recent episode where there's another creature that was made of energy like this and could change shapes and whatnot. But they say this entity must feed on fear.
Mm-hmm.
And because it feeds on fear, it has to kill people, but it has to really make them scared first to be able to like have the fear to feed on. So it makes sense. But then Spock says, oh, it makes sense that it attacks women, because women of every species are more easily scared, is pretty much what he says.
Let me tell you.
Right? Like, oh, what is it? The the Orions. I don't think that's the case, right? Because that's a lie. In Discovery, there's an Orion who's very strong, but I think most of them are more of servants. But yeah, there's Klingon women probably don't show much fear. They're vicious. Ask Neelix. So yeah. I thought that was kind of funny.
That's a good one.
So they realize that this entity has been jumping from host to host because they were able to, with the computer and kind of analyzing where there was mass murders of women that were unresolved, they could kind of see a chain of events where it was traveling. You know, first it was on Earth, and then it moved as mankind continued to move throughout space.
So, like, from planet to planet.
Yeah, these murders were following that course, too, until getting to where they are now.
Yeah.
So it kind of ties the strings together, like, okay, whatever was doing those murders is most likely what's committing these murders. It was kind of a complicated little string they had to put together, but it worked. But so once they come to that conclusion, Mr. Hengist stands up and rebuttals. He's like, this is just, he says, fairy tales, ghosts, and goblins. Like, he doesn't believe any of this stuff. He's not willing to accept that any of this is real. He's like, we literally just watched this guy murder three people and you guys don't care pretty much. But Kirk is not accepting that at all.
Mm-hmm. And Mr. Hengist is like the detective dude, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Cause he's like pushing back on everything. Like you just stated.
Yeah.
But at one point, is it Kirk that says like, I don't know how I'm trying to think. Like, how did they get eyes on Mr. Hengist? Did I say his name right?
Hengist, yeah.
Yeah, like, how did they... Because, like, at one point, they pivoted.
Yeah.
And they started questioning him.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's what it was. You're right. I forgot that. So when they're following that chain of planets, and early on, they mentioned that he came from Rigel 4.
Yeah.
And then they're like, oh, well, the most recent planet with all these murders was Rigel 4, and like, wait a minute, where did you come from? And then, wait a minute, where's the murder weapon from? And they analyze the murder weapon with the computers, and it's like, oh yeah, it was derived from these hills in Rigel 4. And they're like, oh crap, what, you know, they wanted to turn and question him, but he I think he said something, but then he started to fight them off and was trying to flee and whatnot.
Well, okay, so what happened was they wanted him to take the stand.
Oh, that's
and
right.
He was like, no, fuck you guys. I'm not taking the stand. Like, your murderer is right over there.
Yeah, it's like, you guys are being ridiculous. I will not take the stand.
Yeah, and then even, like, the
prefect.
Is that his name?
Yeah.
Okay.
I forgot his name, but he's called the prefect, yeah.
So that dude was like, no, like, you need to take the stand. Like, get on the stand kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then that's when he, like, Mr.
Hengist. Yeah, started fighting.
Yeah, he, like, went, like, cuckoo for Cuckoo Puffs.
Yeah.
And at one point, the spirit entity, whatever you want to call it, like transferred out of his body and it went into
the ship.
No, it went into, oh gosh, Bones? Was it Bones? It went into his body because he even like pulled out a gun, or like his little laser gun or whatever. And he was like, don't come near me. I'm going to shoot the girl. Do you remember that?
No.
Oh my goodness.
Did that really happen? Are you
No, I'm not.
He pulled a gun?
Yeah, a little laser gun. And
phaser.
Whatever it is. Laser gun.
Okay.
And when the entity left Mr. Hengist's body, they found out that Mr. Hengist was actually dead.
Yeah.
So Mr. Hengist wasn't really alive during this episode. It was the entity person.
Yeah, he was just possessed the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, maybe
which is another creepy thing. Like, ew.
I guess I skipped over that in my notes too. Then, but I have in here that he started to run off, and then which was super clearly his stunt double when he started to like kind of fight back.
Oh my god! Yes,
I was like, that's a totally different person. He was wearing like a bald wig, and this guy had some hair. And it's like,
and they weren't even like discreet about it. Like, you totally see the transition from like actor to like stuntman, and like in the stuntman, like he just had like the bald cap, and you can see like the outlines of the bald cap.
It's almost like a wrestler goes off screen and like taps in the other guy, and they trade places real quick.
But you know what? It's not as bad as the last episode that I helped covered, where it was
With the machine hanging from a string, the fishing line.
You could see the fishing line on screen.
Yeah, like come on, guys, you gotta edit that stuff out. Yeah,
but sorry, that was hilarious.
No, it was good. So yeah, I have in here that he tried to fight back, and Kirk punched him to like knock him out, and he punched him so hard that he was dead. And they thought, you know, like how could he have died? I just punched him once. But that's when they realized that the entity left his body. He was just possessed. He wasn't even truly alive,
mm-hmm.
which is, yeah, like you're saying, that's creepy. They've been hanging out with the dead guy this whole time. The dead guy possessed by an alien.
But that explains, like, that explains why, like, it would always go dark right before the murder happened.
Oh, because his body's laying there limp.
Yeah.
While the murder's going on. That's weird. Think about that.
Also, people are holding his hands. What is this happening?
I fell down. Why are your hands so cold? I'm cold-blooded. My people fragile for it. It's cold, please. Kirk knocks him out. He's dead. Then we hear the, like, the yelling across the ship, and lights are dimming and stuff like that. He's yelling a name. I didn't put it in here, but
yeah.
The name of, I imagine it must be his name or the most recent killer. But he's taken over the ship. And so they're kind of worried that he might try to like kill everybody on the ship. But they believe if he's going to try to kill the people on the ship, or primarily women maybe, he's going to try to inspire fear in them first, because he needs them to be afraid before they die so that he can feed on it.
This man needs to, or this entity needs to meet Beyonce, because Beyonce will put it in its place.
You straighten them out.
Who run the world? Who runs the world? Okay. Girls, that's who.
Okay.
I'm sorry, continue.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. What was the recent one? The man may be the head of the household, but the woman is the neck.
Yeah. That was from my big fat
Greek wedding. Wedding.
Yeah.
So funny. So, sorry. Kirk tells Bones to give the crew enough tranquilizer to relax them, to prevent them from being afraid. This was a little more funny than I thought. I thought, you know, everyone's just going to be like calm or fall asleep or whatever. But no, they were all like doped up. Everyone was like drugged, high or drunk or whatever.
Yeah,
it was kind of funny. Right away, you see it with Hulu. Sorry, Sulu.
Hello.
Right away, you see it with Sulu as Bones is injecting him. He's trying to say something, and he just like mellows out immediately. And you know, whatever he's saying is like real slow.
Oh yeah, relaxed. They're all getting like high.
Yeah.
It was like the. It's CBD without the THC.
Something like that.
Just a heavy dose of CBD for everyone. All
right.
Let's chill out.
So then Kirk and Spock are trying to give the computer a problem that'll be so hard it will overload the systems. They think this will keep the entity from really being able to do anything.
Do you remember
what
the question was?
Calculate pi.
No, it was give me the last two or three digits of pi.
Yeah, calculate it to the final digit.
Yeah.
Which Spock uses the terminology of you know, it's a problem that a number that's indefinite, pretty much. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have an end, which was interesting. I imagine if you calculated it long enough, it would have an end, but I guess not.
I'm not a mathematician. I'm not going to ask those dumb questions.
Right. Spock and Kirk are doing some rewiring and stuff like that to be able to pose this question, this challenge to the computer. While they're doing that, the creature is trying to scare the crew. So he's talking like a ghost and saying, you're all going to die and, you know, bloody murderous deaths or whatever. Like, so, all these creepy things over there.
And I couldn't help but in that moment to think of Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
Like, where is the creepy dude behind the curtain?
Yeah. It felt like a little, like, haunted house in someone's, like, garage.
Yeah.
It was funny, but.
But I get what they're trying to do.
Like, Yeah. And meanwhile, Bones is going around to distributing the tranquilizer, which is working really good. Everyone's super chill. Kirk attempts to give Jaris a dose of the tranquilizer. So this is after they did give the puzzle, the challenge to the computer, and is struggling to stay functioning. Kirk tries to give Jaris, the prefect, a dose of the tranquilizer, but then all of a sudden he's possessed by the entity and attacks Kirk. Spock is able to stop him, but the entity then jumps back into Mr. Hengist's dead body, which now has the knife too. And so Kirk is able to stop him, and Spock gives him a shot while Kirk has him like down.
Yeah, so they like pinned him down, didn't they?
Yeah. So now that they have the creature, the entity in a body, and it is drugged, we kind of figure out from that it's not able to move. It's not able to change.
It's bodies. Easier to manage.
Yeah, it's kind of trapped in that body until it can regain its awareness or whatever. So with that, they are able to drag him over to the transporter room and they beam him, transport him into space.
Yeah.
And on the widest dispersion possible, whatever. So they pretty much spread the body and this, to some extent, I guess, the entity's molecules across space to just float and eventually die. So that was kind of crazy. That was kind of crazy.
It was. That's why I say it was like a wannabe, like Law and Order SVU type slash deja vu slash I don't even know what else. Wizard of Oz, maybe. There you go.
Just the fact that the entity was able to possess the ship and go back and forth in a, like a body makes me think like it's not physical though. He's like electrical or, you know, an energy, not a matter. So. But I guess the transporters must be able to transport energy as well. They've done that. So, I don't know. That was a little... I was trying to sit there and pick it apart.
Yeah, it was pretty rough at some times, like how they would transition. To me, the biggest, like, you know...
Questionable
transition was how they figured out, like, the names of the murderers. Mm. And, like how do you have that knowledge just kind of floating in your head? Like, well, this gal... was mentioning names, right?
Because it
was
like, how do they remember the things she was yelling? Yeah.
And so they're like, I don't know, like Smith. And so like they were saying, Smith, let me try. You know what I mean? Like, and then they were able to like connect it. I know the Smith wasn't the last name, but you know what I mean? Like
Conjuratus or something. Oh, there are three weird, super weird names.
Yeah, and it's like, how do you remember that name to that aspect of history? Like, I just don't know.
Well, they didn't know what the names meant. They thought they were words. They first tested them in the computer banks to see, like,
what did
that word mean? Did that word mean death or, you know, something like that? Like,
what was the vocabulary of it?
And they said it doesn't have a meaning. And they said, oh, okay, well, check and see if it's a surname. And sure enough, it found records of, like, oh, yeah, that was the name of a serial killer. And then so she was repeating the names of all the killers this alien was called by.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay, maybe I just
so, probably. Your phone vibrated.
No, your son was crying.
Oh, okay. after that, they just kind of have the little heartwarming ending where everyone's laughing uncontrollably. Scotty is relieved because now he is innocent and he knows he's innocent because poor guy was going unconscious. Oh, that was one thing we didn't really point out is they mentioned briefly that it had a hypersonic or a hypnotic scream. So the alien was the one that was causing those screams and they would hypnotize everybody around to like not remember. So if there was anybody around other than the victim that saw or had any recollection of the creature, they would forget it. So that's why Scotty's mind was being wiped blank every time something would happen. Mm. It's because the entity would kill the woman and erase his memory.
Interesting.
Yeah, I didn't mention it, but. Yeah. Everyone's laughing and they're kind of joking about like, oh, hey, now you can finally get back down to shore leave on the planet. But Kirk is like, well, you know, you guys aren't in any good shape to go with me. So I guess I'm going to have to go by myself. Isn't he just as drugged as them? At least he's acting drugged. But I don't know I don't remember if he took the shot himself.
Captain Kirk?
Yeah.
No.
No? Okay. He was acting very relaxed at the end, at least, but maybe he's just relieved from all the excitement. But he did have a crewman die too, the woman Tracy, Lieutenant Tracy. So nobody should be laughing. They should be like mourning the dead or still.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that was the end. That was kind of that's just a hard episode to get through, honestly. It was better to go through and review it, and the story made a little more sense watching it a second time. And, you know, it was a little more funny, but it was still just kind of a weird story.
It was. I've seen better. Yeah. It's okay
though. What do you think the moral of the story was?
Ooh. Moral of the story would be that things are not always the way that they seem.
Mm.
You know, how they were trying to blame Scotty for 3 murders and he was clearly like, he could have totally been the murderer. I mean, like knife in hand kind of situation. Well, I mean, not knife in hand, but like.
Yeah. Two of the times. Yeah. I think it's something like don't go to Crazy Planet strip clubs, like
that too.
Something, I mean at least learn their laws before you go. If you find out like if something goes down, I might get, you know, tortured to death. Have
slow, torturous death. Yeah.
Maybe it's not worth it. Maybe just go to a local strip club where you know the laws. And yeah, like, you know, trust but verify. Like, these guys don't, they trust that Scotty was innocent. He's their friend and they know him and stuff like that. So they could just say, you know what, this planet is crazy. They're trying to take advantage of us or manipulate us or frame us or whatever. But they could have just beamed back to their ship and left. And, you know, in violation of Federation policy or directive or whatever. But they decided, no, we need to stay. We need to follow these guys' rules and everything. But we're going to fight tooth and nail to prove his innocence.
Yeah.
We know it must be. So I think I'm going to give this episode a C. I probably would have given it like a D+, but in reviewing it, it got better. So it wasn't that hard of an episode. What would you give it?
Yeah, I would give it a D. Like, just a solid D.
Oh, man. Okay.
It just...
Oh, I know why.
The potential is there.
Disney moms like the D.
Oh, my gosh. I'm done with you. So done.
Weren't you talking about making shirts that say that? Disney moms like the D?
I know. It's yeah. It's in the works.
Okay. That'd be great. I'm just too funny. All right. So... I hope you guys like this episode, this review. This is, I know, a little bit harder of an episode. We will have more guest hosts joining us for the next few episodes. Next week, or in 2 weeks, join us for season 2, episode 15, The Trouble with Tribbles. I think that's going to be...
Say that 3 times.
All right. Well, so you remember when you, at the convention, you met a guy dressed as Captain Kirk holding a little stuffed ball.
That was
a tribble. Yeah.
Oh my goodness. And yeah. He handed me the little ball and I was like, what is this?
Is this a Furby?
And I'm just like, I'm not going to question Captain Kirk. Okay, I'll hold it.
Yeah. He's like, that's what I wet my boat with. Like, okay.
But he's also holding like a diamond cube thing.
Yeah.
Do you remember?
I didn't meet him. I was gone somewhere.
Did you see the picture though?
Probably. I don't remember.
It might be from the same episode. That'll be interesting to watch.
We'll see. Yeah. I don't know.
All right. Well, you can find Trek Freaks on Twitter, Instagram, Twitch, Discord, and geekfreakspodcast.com. Don't forget to leave a review. Mm-hmm. Let this guy know how he's doing.
And check out Disney Moms Gone Wrong. They have a lot of hilarious episodes.
Yeah. Disney Moms Gone Wrong is definitely a more laxed podcast. Mm-hmm. It's Diana, Sarah, and myself. We're 3 Disney moms that are, I don't know, have apparently too much time on our hands.
Somehow, all these moms find an hour to record every week and they think they have too much time. And finally, the baby's asleep. I could talk to my friends.
Yeah, you don't have to be a Disney mom to listen to our podcast. You can be a Disney dad or just a parent and you want to come laugh and hang out with us.
Nice.
All right, guys. Transporter room, 2 to beam up.